Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today we have Charles Hugh Smith. He's author, leading global finance blogger, and America's philosopher, we call him. He's the author of several books on our economy and society, including A Radically Beneficial World, Automation, Technology, and Creating Jobs for All, Resistance, Revolution, Liberation, A Model for Positive Change, The Nearly Free University and the Emerging Economy, Pathfinding Our Destiny, Preventing the Final Fall of Our Democratic Republic, and Will You Be Richer or Poorer? And his most recent book, we've discussed in the past, is Global Crisis National Renewal, A Grand Strategy for the United States. His blog of twominds.com is one of CNBC's top alternative finance sites. Welcome, Charles.
Well, thank you, Richard. And I'm looking forward to our discussion today on your paper, which lays out what you call the Great Awakening, which is a market-based and human scale-based alternative to the Great Reset that we discussed last week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and exactly. And a lot of the books that you've written help to address many aspects of the solution, as well as initially, of course, highlighting the challenges. So that will be great discussion. And of course, you're referring to the article that I published that's entitled The Great Awakening, an Alternative Great Reset Based on the Principles of the Austrian School of Economics. So we did a podcast last time that talked about the Great Reset, the World Economic Forum, and the Great Reset agenda. We talked about all of the destination goals that it has in the form of several listed projects, programs, and initiatives. There's a little diagram in the article that has the spokes of a wheel that lists all of those projects. Looks like maybe about 100 of those. And they also look to strive to meeting or promoting the 17 United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. But we pointed out, that they're currently coming short of those Sustainable Development Goals, and in many cases, actually making them worse in terms of where they are, the state of where they are in the world today. So they're actually making things worse rather than better in many cases. And so what we'd like to do today is discuss an alternative Great Reset. And we're calling it the Great Awakening Vision. It's based on the principles of the school of thought known as the Austrian School of Economics, which is a unique school of thought that was initially developed in the 1870s in Vienna, Austria, by some economists there. Nothing to do with the country of Austria other than that it came initially from Vienna with those initial founding economists of that school of thought. So we have the principles of that, and we wanted to also present an end vision. So that's where we go in the paper. We don't talk about much of a migration strategy, but we're presenting an end vision of where we think the alternative Great Reset should go. And what we're saying here is that, look, there is a way to get to the city that we're trying to get to, but using a different highway. And that highway is much more interesting, much more happy, less coercion involved, more freedoms and liberties, or I should say freedoms and liberties maintained, and promoted, and also it's just less of an authoritarian type of approach that the Great Reset entails. Your thoughts, Charles?
Yeah, I in your paper there's six kind of principles of your Great Awakening vision, and I think what the way that I would contextualize them is that they lay out a path that that relies on different incentives than the Great Reset. In other words, the Great Reset claims to be the path to these UN sustainability goals, but there's really not a lot of incentives in the Great Reset. It's mostly coercion. Like, you know, we're all going to be forced to do this and forced to use that, and then there's this whole coercion structure as opposed to an incentive structure. Like, so it's like all stick and no carrot. And what I see in your in the Great Awakening vision that you've written is it's about incentives. You know, in other words, we can save the planet and save humanity by appealing to what works with humanity, which humans respond to incentives. So this is one of your first points, which is aligning as opposed to going against human nature. And then preserving freedoms and liberties, which is a huge incentive, right? People want what we call agency, valuing sound money and property rights so that people can actually, you know, get ahead, right? And they can own property and capital. And then fostering direct democracy, which in my view means without having a representational form, which is easily corrupted by, you know, great wealth. And then minimizing controls on the human population. We're talking about less coercion and less punishment for not following, you know, some rules, and helping society and the environment. So I think those are all keys of like an incentive structure that's going to work. And so I think you know, you can fill in the Great Awakening vision. You have a framework here. But I think, in my view, it's all about creating incentives that will encourage people to do, to be productive and constructive, as opposed to destructive, which is what the current system does. Is we the current system is largely what I call waste is growth. In other words, the more we waste, that's counted as growth in the GDP. And then corporations have incentives to, you know, plan in obsolescence. Make things so they can't be repaired. And so, you know, the global economy is extremely inefficient and wasteful because of these really perverse incentives. And so the way I would summarize your Great Awakening vision is it's establishing productive incentives for making better use of the Earth's resources and our capital and our labor. So but maybe you want to go ahead and describe a bit more about the vision.
Yeah, absolutely. And we then move in the paper to present an overall framework architecture illustrated with some block diagrams of what this vision is based on. So we have the elements of the Austrian School of Economics at the base that moves into market environmentalism, which is an approach to environmentalism that is characterized by four principles. I'll mention those a bit later. And that following of market environmentalism comes from the Austrian Economic Center and also the American Conservation Coalition. Those two organizations put those four principles of market environmentalism together. So that differentiates from agenda-based environmentalism, essentially. We then have an element of small, efficient government, which then moves up into limited, efficient regulations, having regulations that are very limited and but efficient. And so then there's also efficient educational systems. prohibition of special interest group and lobbyists, which tends to happen when you don't have the direct democracy, as you mentioned earlier. If you have a form of representation that there's, you know, you'll have these elements of special interest group and lobbyists influencing the representatives of government. We also have then the great successful businesses. So in the private sector, spurring elements where they're helping society and the environment, given their superior ESG metrics. They promote UN sustainable development goals, very socially responsible, and have different types of impact investment projects going. And so all of this goes up to the promotion of the UN sustainable development goals. And then this leads to finance solutions to legacy government debt and unfunded liability. So just to review from our last discussion, we emphasize and explain how a large part of this great reset is focused on a financial reset. So the governments have that interest in terms of promoting some type of agenda that will help them to address the unsustainable government debt and the unsustainable unfunded liabilities challenges. Of course, there's several other projects and initiatives that the Great Reset has, but first and foremost, we see that as having been the driver from the beginning of this, and we discussed that in the last segment. So if anybody wants to review that, welcome to do so on part one. Additional thoughts, Charles?
Yeah, it's you also include here the 17 sustainable development goals of the UN, and they're all what I would call sort of undeniably warm and fuzzy, like no poverty, you know, good health, you know, clean water. These are goals that everybody can agree on as being worthwhile, but how do we get there? And and so I think that's the thing is so my my work fits into your into your Great Awakening in this way. I summarize the solution I'm proposing as the migration path to all these good goals everybody agrees on is local production, local agency, and local capital. In other words, a radically decentralized set of solutions that work because each different community or locale, it can't be, it doesn't have a cookie cutter solution. You know, the earth is extremely complicated, right? And the human population and the environment, the ecosystem is all very complicated. So we need to let each community and find its own best solutions, right? And make the best use of its own labor and capital. And so it's good to share solutions, but it's got to be up to the local people to have the agency to have some kind of input and to choose what works best for them and their culture, right? So, and this fits in with your scheme because local production means that you're producing, you're not just a consumer of something made 5,000 miles away. You know, we have to relocalize and reshore production of essentials and then provide agency, which your system calls direct democracy. And then we need to relocalize capital so that the local communities actually have capital and they're not relying on capital from 5,000 miles away. And I think that what I really like about your proposal is that in my view, all of my work is centralization itself is the core problem. Because once you centralize power and wealth, then you've fundamentally and distorted, you know, the entire system because all of the power and wealth inevitably starts being concentrated in the hands of the few at the expense of the many. There is no way to have centralization and not have it end up corrupted, right? And so what we're trying to do is, I think in my view, with the Great Awakening is to push like, you know, efficiency, you know, good incentives, agency, property rights, and capital down to the lowest possible level. And that's where you get solutions.
Yeah, exactly. And you've written a lot about those principles in your many books. This also intersects the market environmentalism movement that I mentioned earlier. Those are four principles. One is market economy, like a free market economy principle. Number two, private property rights, providing incentives for both environmental sustainability and accountability. Decentralization, as you just mentioned, many environmental challenges are communal in nature. Local communities are better placed than governments, you know, far away. They know more what's going on locally to manage the shared resources. Number four, optimism and innovation. So that is all about emphasizing, you know, using technology or innovative solutions. Now, not only in the environment, but all of the initiatives, projects of the Great Reset, many of them suffer from not looking at two areas that have been defined by the UN itself in terms of best practices, and that is on areas of privacy regulations, big data, and areas of human rights. So there's actually some guidance documents, best practices that the United Nations Human Rights Office of the High Commissioner have put out, as well as another document that's entitled Data Privacy, Ethics and Protection Guidance Note on Big Data for Achievement of the 2030 Agenda. So these two documents, many of the principles and best practices are not being followed, but that is a big point. They need to be integrated into the technology solutions, because if you do that, you won't have this the sense of monitoring, surveillance, authoritarian you know, components that everybody's becoming more aware of, you know, and that will ultimately result in the failure of the Great Reset agenda. So those two best practices areas on the UN are just simply not being followed.
Your thoughts? Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point, Richard. And I'm going to just focus just for a second on your the four principles of market environmentalism. And I think what's important for me to emphasize is that when you say a market economy, what we want, the ideal here is a localized market. In other words, a market that is free within a local community. And so the idea here is to separate that from a globalized market. And I'll give you just I just want to mention like what I consider like a typical analogy is if you take wild fisheries and you let the globalized forces do their thing, well, then you get these huge fishing trawlers from thousands of miles away that strip the entire sea of all fish and destroy the ecosystem and the fishery for extremely short-term gain. And as we know, a lot of these trawlers will just catch everything and throw 80% of it out because it's not suitable for global markets. And so this is just an abomination, right? This is the opposite of a sustainable future. And whereas local communities are able to price in, you know, and part of what a market does is it discovers the value, price, and risk of things. And so the local communities understand that the fishery has to be sustained. And so there'll be naturally limits on how fish are caught, what the seasons, you know, allow for spawning, all these kind of common sense rules for when you have a goal of not just short-term profit for some distant corporation, but for a sustainable profitability in the community itself, right? And that allows for a lot of private sector competition and innovation, but it's within a framework where the local community has control of these resources and these markets, right, for their own benefit, not the benefit of somebody 5,000 miles away. And then I also want to mention that, you know, in optimism and innovation, and of course I've written a lot about how I think technology can create useful jobs, you know, and eliminate poverty through creating localized markets for capital and labor that don't exist in the current system. But I also want to mention that degrowth is a movement that a lot of people are interested in, and it's a very diverse kind of movement. It hasn't been concentrated in the hands of just a few people. And so my interpretation is that degrowth is based on the French word décroissance, and that means decline, you know, and a lot of people think that means a decline in our living standards, and that's actually not what I think it means. I think it means a decline in the power of the state, and there's a lot of other people in the degrowth movement who agree with this, and a decline in waste. In other words, the global economy is just incredibly wasteful because we have perverse incentives such as planned obsolescence, so that things are designed to fail very quickly, and then they have to be just dumped because the corporations that manufactured them made it impossible to repair them, right? And so part of what I think the potential of the Great Awakening is to reorder the incentives so that durability of products is once again something we value and something we pursue, right? And also the right to repair. So we can actually, you know, reduce the amount of labor and capital needed to support a very good life with a lot of well-being. But we desperately need to get back to seeking efficiency and productivity as opposed to waste. And I think that that philosophy fits in just hand in glove with market environmentalism.
Yep, exactly. And so what we've done is come up with a roadmap plan. We call it, it's listed in the form of a little chart at the end of the article. And it's divided into two columns. One is actions and the other is goals. So what type of actions can get you to those goals? So the chart is called the Great Awakening Vision Roadmap Plan. And we go through the lists, some of which we've discussed. So the first one talks about efficiency, as you were just alluding to, setting up and operationalizing small, minimalist, efficient government based on a foundation of the principles of the Austrian School of Economics, and a system of direct democracy, as we've talked about earlier. This can get you to that efficient government with little or no debt and minimal conflicts of interest. So that would be the goals. And the second row speaks to the challenges of the unsustainable government debt and unsustainable unfunded liabilities, which is we see as first and foremost the driver of the entire Great Reset agenda. So the idea here is restructuring that debt and unfunded liabilities through various options. So there's the concept of converting debt into equity. This is in contrast to what is being proposed currently on the Great Reset agenda. So there's elements of outright defaulting on debt, which is going to cause a lot of problems. There's also the concept of turning the debt into perpetual bonds. So what that means is if you have a bond, $100,000, let's say, and it's owned by a pension fund as an asset, what would happen is that bond would get converted to what's called a perpetual bond, meaning that you'll only get the interest payment on a yearly basis, and you'll never get the principal forever, and then the bond dies at some point upon the death of whoever owns it. So that's what's being discussed now. So what we say is, why not just convert the debt into equity or restructure, downsize systems relating to unfunded liabilities? Another approach, or that could be done also together, limit spending and liabilities based on growth rate of the economy, and foster innovation and entrepreneurialism in the private sector altogether. So those are some solutions to the legacy unsustainable government debt and unfunded liabilities. We also talk on the third row to implement market environmentalism solutions, which we've mentioned the four principles for improving the environment as the goal, and there's also emphasizing technology-based solutions that integrate the privacy and freedoms, as mentioned before, that are lacking in the current solutions that the Great Reset is putting forth. There's also the idea of encouraging great businesses in the economy with superior ESG metrics that collectively promote the UN Sustainable Development Goals and socially responsible elements, as well as projects involving impact investments. So all of this goes significantly towards a healthy and prosperous economy and population. So all of this is very synergistic and is aligned with human nature, coming from the principles of the Austrian School of Economics, which emphasizes aligning economic systems with the positive aspects of human nature.
Right, and I think that's very important that your plan addresses the massive overhang of debt that has to be dealt with in such a way that all the stakeholders feel that that they the losses or the sacrifices that will be required have been shared amongst all the stakeholders. Right, and that's the that's where our current system is, of course, defective. Is that the few at the top get to push all the sacrifice onto others below. And I also just want to mention that when we talk about markets, I think that a lot of people forget. They think that what's presented as a market today is it is not really a market, and this is where the Austrian school has a lot of educational potential. Is that, for instance, a lot of the debt related created in the world by governments today is related to medical and healthcare expenses that are extraordinarily high, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that at least in the U.S., it's run by like cartels, and there's no real true competition, right? And so, if you want to have a real market, not a fake market or a simulation of a market, you have to have competition, and you have to be able to enforce that competition. You cannot allow monopolies to gain control of the sector. So competition and transparency, so every participant in the market has the same information. And then you've got to make sure that every participant has skin in the game. There can't be bailouts and that kind of thing where someone can go in and reap all the gains, and then when they, instead of taking losses, they're bailed out by some central state or central bank. So, that we live in a world where a lot of people claim to have that we have a market economy, but in many cases we don't. And so, what I'm looking for in the Great Awakening, with great anticipation as an actual solution is, you've got to be able to enforce real markets, not fake markets, that are run by cartels or influenced by special interests and that kind of thing. And if you can impose and make sure everybody follows the rules of a real market, then you're going to get much greater efficiency and productivity out of the economy. And that, as you say, that will reduce the amount of debt being piled up, because debt is not efficient. It's basically the the squandering of resources, you know, to protect the few at the expense of the many. And there's a lot of excuses being given as to why we have to borrow all this money. But if you look at where the money goes, it goes to the few, not the many, and in most cases, right? So I think that those are points to emphasize that the Great Awakening requires real markets. And that's, and in most cases, we really don't have real markets. We have a kind of a system hodgepodge of cartels and monopolies. And so those will have to be broken up, and they are the result of a highly centralized system, which is what the Great Reset is all about. You know, let's not only keep the centralized system, let's make it even more centralized. And that I think is the problem, not the solution, where the Great Awakening is, let's decentralize capital productivity agency and give people a chance to innovate and acquire a better life for themselves. And I think that's really the core of the Great Awakening philosophy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm planning to speak with a former Goldman Sachs banking executive later this week. Her name is Leslie Manoukian, and she's talked a lot about the agenda that she sees of the very wealthy or elite, if you want to call them, as driving this Great Reset agenda in order to institute a controlled demolition of the economic and political system in order to save what they have. And because they see, given these unsustainable debt and unsustainable unfunded liability challenges, they see that as a threat to what they have. But what we're proposing in this alternative Great Reset agenda called the Great Awakening Vision, and a lot of the aspects that you've written about as well, which are aligned and consistent with that vision, we're proposing and seeing a more equitable type of structure, system, more fair, and gives the opportunities for entrepreneurialism and innovation to all, right? Given if you have efficient, more efficient regulations, less lobbyists, less special interest group, you know, more of a direct democracy approach, and emphasizing solutions that are technology based, not having elements of authoritarianism or control surveillance. So yeah, it's all synergistic, and what we have presents a much happier and more sustainable vision for the long term.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Richard. And I look forward to listening to your podcast on the mechanisms of the super wealthy protecting themselves at the expense of the planet and the rest of us. And that is certainly part of it. But today we talked about a positive vision. And I truly believe that this is the solution. In other words, you make sure the playing field is level and give people a chance and a way to accumulate capital and have agency and be part of the localized solutions to our global problems. And I think you're going to have a system that could really fundamentally change the global society and global economy in short order, not you know, 50 years. I think we could see change happen much more rapidly with the kind of incentives that are laid out here.
Well, great. Awesome insight, Charles, as always. And the insights that you've provided from all of the books that you've written, thank you very much. How can our listeners learn more about your work?
Yeah, please visit my website, oftwominds.com, and you'll find sample chapters of all my books, including the most recent one, Global Crisis, National Renewal.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Charles.
Okay. Thank you, Richard.
Great. And we'll end it there. All right. Yeah, So when Leslie Manoukian on Friday, what she's talked about a lot is, I mean, she points out the same thing that I'm pointing out on the unfunded liabilities and unsustainable debt. And she actually sees a big driver as these, the billionaires and all, if you will, like the Davos crowd, right? The people that go to Davos. Is sort of banding together. He says, "Oh my God, we're the debt problem is here. We've been talking about it for years, and there's no escape." And so that's why she said, like we mentioned last time in our podcast, that the they had to, the repo crisis, right, drove was driving interest rates to 10%, and that's it. They just had to move. They had to move at that time. They had to start implementing the agenda. And so that's why the timing, right? It's not necessarily on the COVID crisis. And so but they took the opportunity, as they said, right, of the COVID crisis to launch it. And but the timing aligned with the debt coming to a head. They reached the limit essentially at that time. So yeah, she's saying she has a big emphasis on that, like a controlled demolition of the economy to sort of build it back better before it totally crashes. And that way they save whatever they have, right, in terms of money and assets, and they don't lose everything, which would likely happen, right? If the whole system crashes, everybody loses everything. And yeah, it's just, what do you think of that, her thesis?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely right, because think about what you and I would do. I mean, if you and I were managing $100 billion, that's what we'd been doing from 2008 too. We knew that the system had been totally abused, right? And it was like we would be getting our heads together and go, okay, this isn't going to work in the long term. So what do we have to do to make sure that we're going to still have our 100 billion to manage, or maybe even have 200 billion. So yeah, and so I mean, I always think about that as the way to go, is that put yourselves in the feet of the shoes of these same people, and that's exactly what we would do. Like, we're not going to let the thing go down. Controlled demolition, I think, is a terrific analogy, and I think it's brilliant.
So I think we're gonna have that.
Good, good. And then we got, I don't know how many, I don't really track how our audience too much, but we got almost 2,000 listens to our last one.
Oh,
I
okay.
was I was I was promoting it. But I think it's a great series, part one and part two, and I'll try to find some way to make it a permanent part of my site somewhere, So, but that'll fit in really nicely, Leslie's thing. And it kind of we discussed the timing, but she's going to give it more color and make it that controlled demolition is a great analogy.
You can actually listen to, so I've got the footnotes. If you go to the Financial Repression Authority website, you'll see the article there. It's one of the top four on the blog. And
Okay.
if you click on that, you can see the links. I've got the references with links, and her talk is one of those links.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's quite, she has a whole set of slides, and she goes through the history of the debt situation and why it built up. I mean, I like to just make it simple and say, look at, the way, once you get representative, if you don't have direct democracy, if you have representative democracy, what tends to happen is it's like a popularity contest, right? It says, if, you say, if you vote for me, I'll give you all these free things. And so they end up raiding the public treasury and, going after the wealthy, right? More tax, or just printing money, creating more bonds, whatever. And so the debt just keeps piling up higher and higher, right? Because there's not enough, it's just endless, right? It just keeps growing they have no intention of paying it back. And so it just grows and grows and grows until at some point it just there's no you know it just the whole system crashes. So that's what's been happening, right? If and you know it's just got to the point where you've reached the limits of that Keynesian economics, right? Borrowing and spending and the unfunded liabilities, right? All these lavish pensions and lavish government salaries and pensions, for not really much value, right? Provided to society.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
Yeah.
that thank you for that. I'll look for that like her presentation. But well, thanks again, and I'll let you go, Richard. And do you want to set a date for April? Just
Let's see, April 20.
okay.
And I'll send a media invite shortly also.
Yeah, and then I think there's going to be plenty of market action to talk about, but
Oh
we'll
yeah,
see what develops
tons
by
of stuff.
mid-April. We can talk about any number of things, yields, rates, the fake Fed. Oh yeah, we're going to raise rates 7 times. They should take that's like a comedy show, right? But anyways, thanks very much, and I think this was a great program. I think we did pretty good.
Yes, likewise. Yeah. Thank you so much, Charles. And
Okay, talk to you later then.
yeah, take care. Have a good one.
Okay,
Bye-bye.
bye-bye.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.